Hello, it's Wednesday, July 21st, 2021, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Reynolds Journalism Institute's studio. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my colleagues, Kathy Kiley and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, a private Israeli company sold spyware to governments around the globe to hack the cell phones of journalists and activists worldwide. I'll ask Ernest and Kathy about Project Pegasus and the efforts to uncover it. A Central Illinois television station apologizes for how it covered the death of a police officer in the line of duty 3 months ago. We'll talk about what happened, when it happened, from then and to now. And
you were successful, and I am successful, and I'm wondering, are you happy?
We're going to talk about the ethics of that five-second soundbite and the shadow that it's casting on an hours-long documentary. There's a lot more that hopefully we'll get to before our half hour is up, but I want to start with COVID's next wave and the devastating toll it's taking on the people of Missouri. As case numbers here continue to rise, it's nothing like what's happening in Greene County, where hospitals in Springfield and in that area just can't keep up. Dr. Priscilla Fraze treats patients at Ozarks Healthcare in West Plains. She spoke with KY3 TV.
The most recent death that I've personally seen was very hard. It was a lot. Coding somebody and not being able to get them back and knowing that they and their family all had COVID and wondering if it was going to impact other family members the same way. I can't really talk about it more than that because it was an emotional event for me.
Dr. Priscilla Fraze says misinformation on social media about the pandemic and vaccines is only making matters worse.
Because bits and pieces of real information are being skewed to a point of view that may not be based in fact.
And you may have heard President Biden's sharp words on this subject when he answered a question asked of him by NBC's Peter Alexander.
They're killing people. I mean, the only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated. And they're killing people.
So that was last Friday. On Monday, the president kind of backed off some of those statements following a response from Facebook, which says that it has made efforts towards fighting that misinformation and disinformation, that it stopped some 18 million posts that were inaccurate. I think of the number of posts in my feed a day and just the number of people I'm connected to or the number of organizations or businesses or whatever you may put there. 18 million is a drop in the ocean when you compare those two.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the president needed to walk back his remarks at all. I mean, clearly, social media is not the only source of disinformation. I mean, Fox News is doing a pretty good job of discouraging people from getting vaccinated, but the problem is that the social media creates an echo chamber, and particularly in rural areas that don't have great broadband, Facebook is an incredibly important source of information. And the thing that Facebook has done from the get-go is not acknowledge that it is a publisher. You know, they want to say, oh, we're just a platform, and so we're not going to edit anything. And they have never taken responsibility for the content on their platform. And until they do, they're still going to have problems because no amount of algorithms on Earth are going to be able to do the job that an editor can do, a human being. And until they start to put some human resources into editing and making news judgments about what should and should not go out there, I think we're just going to see this repeated over and over again.
Well, I mean, to get to your point about Facebook, there's two things here. Number one, they don't want to put the resources into it because that's going to take away from their profits. Mm-hmm. Number two, they don't want to acknowledge that they're a publisher because that opens them up to lawsuits, which will also take away from their profits. So a lot of this goes back
greed.
To that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, absolutely. But the other thing here is that Facebook is saying it's doing everything it can. It's doing everything that it can within the open space of Facebook. It's those closed spaces within Facebook, and NPR did a really good story on this yesterday. It's the closed areas of Facebook where people are only talking to each other in these closed environments.
And amplifying that echo chamber.
And amplifying the echo chamber. That's where a lot of this misinformation is going on. And the other thing here is that the level, you can hear the level of frustration on the part of, which is basically what the president was sort of saying, the level of frustration with health officials about what's going on here.
Well, that yesterday in Congress too, when you see the way that Dr. Fauci responded to Rand Paul.
We've got to get that up on the Links blog, because that was incredible, where Fauci basically called Rand Paul a liar and said, you're lying, you don't know what you're talking about, and what you're doing is dangerous. That is basically what Fauci was saying, and he's pushing back, but everyone else is pushing back because the level of frustration now is different than the level of frustration back when none of us had the vaccine. Mm-hmm. The level of frustration now is those who are vaccinated are getting to the point where they go like, look, you need to get the vaccine, because if you don't, we are never going to be able to get past this.
So we talk about Facebook and what it's willing to do, right, to make those moves. And I'm losing track of days. I want to say that this was Sunday, Monday-ish. Twitter suspended Marjorie Taylor Greene for 12 hours because of the disinformation that she was putting out on that platform. And my first response before I saw the full coverage was, great, so they're giving her a timeout. When are they doing this? 9 o'clock at night? And then I come across an article from the USA Today that she was put in timeout from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. What good does that do?
You know, again, that's, you know, we're going to say that we're doing this, but how effective is that? Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, that goes back to what you're talking about, Kathy, which is, do they really want to do this? Or is this just, we're going to placate the skeptics, we're going to placate those who are criticizing us? But in reality, we're not going to do what's necessary.
Yes. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing is, one thing we know, mm-hmm. the studies have shown, is that viral information, anything that makes you angry or afraid, is viral. Mm-hmm. And virality is something that is prized on the internet. And so what the internet platforms want is engagement. They want you to keep clicking through. They want you to stay on their sites. And putting out truth and moderation does not do that. So they really don't want to get rid of Marjorie Taylor Greene. If there's a way they can bring Donald Trump back, they will, because it's good for business. And so the question here, and it's similarly with Senator Paul, if you went and asked all of these people, have they gotten a vaccine? I would bet you 99.9% of them have, but they're happy to pander to people who are afraid to get the vaccine, don't want to get the vaccine, because it's good politics. And so they're willing to put people's lives in danger for personal gain in both cases.
So they were talking this morning early on MSNBC about the idea of the movable middle, the centrists who have been vaccine hesitant until now, but could perhaps be coaxed into getting it, and kind of that modeling we saw, if you would call it that, in July, that we saw from Scalise getting the vaccine this week, realizing and coming out and saying when he got it that he's seeing and noticing that the people who are hospitalized, the people who are dying, are overwhelmingly people who are unvaccinated, and people who have been vaccinated fully who are still contracting COVID in those breakthrough cases. They're either asymptomatic or having relatively mild cases there. And it's interesting you brought up Fox News, because one of the things that we've also been seeing from Fox a little bit more this week than we have been previously is a little bit more of that move to the center. Hannity saying, I believe in the science. I believe in vaccination. You should be getting the vaccine. Is that Fox's capitulation to the movable or the movable middle there?
Well, I think, you know, the rising case numbers are leading to problems in the economy. problems as it relates to business. They were economists and those within the government have been expecting businesses to pick up. Now there's this huge fear that that's not going to happen because of these rising caseloads, and that's going to cripple the economy. And no one across the spectrum wants that to happen.
Yeah, and I'll give you a perfect example. I have a very dear friend who is planning on visiting me in 2 weeks. I got an email from her. She lives in New York. She's an organ transplant recipient, so she has a compromised immune system. She's vaccinated, but because of what the headlines about Missouri, she has chosen to put off her trip. And I didn't blame her one bit. But it made me wonder how many other people who maybe have a family member who has cancer or a child too young to be vaccinated are putting off plans to go to Lake of the Ozarks or do
or
something.
Branson.
Exactly.
Branson being in
so
the heart
how much of
Southwest
a hit
Missouri.
Is Missouri going to take because of the really bad headlines about what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue. And now all of a sudden, the governor has pivoted. Mm-hmm. And said that now I think today he's supposed to announce, I don't know if he's done it by the time we've taped the show here, but he's going to announce today incentives for people to take the vaccine. And he's being criticized because less than 2 weeks ago, he was basically telling the federal government,
don't come knock on our doors.
Yeah, we need your help, but don't come knocking on people's doors because that's going to only push them away from mm-hmm. getting the vaccine. So, I mean, it's too many mixed messages,
well,
too much misinformation.
Well, and it was you're even being kind in how you're characterizing what he said. You know, it was really, there are all these politicians who are caricaturing what's going on as some revenue are coming knocking at your door, and it's a neighbor, usually. It's not the government it's the government's organizing a campaign, but it's...
But they're using people in the community.
It's volunteers, yeah. It's crazy. I mean, and so that kind of hyperbole and exaggeration and caricaturing of what's really meant to be a public health effort is one of the things that's hamstrung the vaccination effort, I think.
Yep. Okay, so meanwhile, in Cuba, people took to the streets in protest for the first time in more than six decades, calling for the government to act on what has become deteriorating living conditions and a lack of basic goods and services, including access to medical care and the COVID vaccines here that people just don't want. The island nation's president unleashed police to counter the crowd with videos on social media showing violent confrontations and shots fired as people were being also hauled away. The government cut internet access to try and stifle word of these protests. And Kathy, a lot has happened since the peak of these protests last week.
Yeah, this is a real dilemma for President Biden, and it's kind of an inevitable, it's a recurring problem that presidents have, which is there's a humanitarian crisis in Cuba. That is one of the things fueling the hostility to the government, and so part of you wants to help the people, the innocent people who are being deprived of food, medical care, etc. But there are people who very sincerely believe that if you do that, you're actually enabling the dictators because you're helping, you're placating the people, and then the dictators continue in power. And of course, this is a big political issue in the United States because there are so many Cubans, particularly in Florida, who fled Castro and are very bitter about it. So you can see the president kind of moving, wanting to sort of move things back towards the Obama administration, of course, which he was part of, detente with Cuba. But there's a lot of pressure on him right now. And it's not an easy, obvious right answer.
Right. I think one of the things that's sort of helping him in this is the fact that, as you mentioned, they cut off the internet, but they couldn't cut it off completely because people were still having access using VPN to be able to get various news and information both out of Cuba, but to also get information in from supporters, in particular those in South Florida, who have been for the last several years pushing various forms of information. And in fact, the government in Cuba is accusing those operations of fomenting a lot of what was happening last week.
Yeah, well, and that's another part of the problem, because it really does look like a grassroots thing. And you don't want to give, that's another part of the dilemma for Biden, he doesn't want to give any credence to the regime that's saying this is all the devil in the United States. So it's a difficult situation, I think. But what you said, Ernest, I think the internet is actually the friend of the people in this case. There was just yesterday, I think, an op-ed in the New York Times by a journalist from Cuba who clearly was able to get that information out. He was clearly able to get a column to the New York Times, which described what was going on the streets and said, we're not turning back. So it's interesting. Will this be the Berlin Wall moment for Cuba?
Right.
Okay, so Project Pegasus. I Googled it, and at first it sounded a bit like a fantasy, a mission from the Marvel Universe to study the Tesseract and harness its power. I read that on a fandom wiki. Or it's the name given to an international investigative effort that has revealed a pretty big deal. It's a spying effort on the part of several governments and monitoring journalists, opposition politicians, and activists.
The president of France. That came out today.
At the center of this is an Israeli company, the NSO Group, which licensed its spyware called Pegasus. Now, this was originally marketed for tracking terrorists and serious criminals. How did it get to the point where it was now being used against journalists and opposition leaders?
Well, it got to that point because all of a sudden those entities that bought that software said, well, wait a minute, we could use this for other things. We could spy on our political enemies. We can spy on journalists. We could spy on dissidents. And now it's sort of morphed. It goes back in some ways to some of the things that were pointed out in WikiLeaks. Remember that from a long time ago? These were things that were coming out then, and now we're finding out, well, yeah, a lot of that took place, and here was the apparatus by which they used to do this. So, and now it's happening at a high level. I mean, you know, you can have someone from a lowly journalist in India to the president of France. I mean, so it's a pretty big deal. My question is it going to resonate with the public in light of everything else that's going on? Climate change, I mean, real climate change, where people are being impacted in their everyday lives. We're still battling COVID. We're still dealing with the economy. There's so much other news and information going on out there. How much legs is Pegasus going
to
have?
I also have to wonder, as you say that too, and I keep thinking back to some of these questions, like, you know, why should people care about A, B, C, or D? Has the general public come to accept that this is just going to happen, and it's the price of admission of using devices, of using social media? My information's out there. I've put it out there, so the government's looking at it too. So what?
Yeah, well, this goes to a new level of creepy.
Okay.
I mean, because first of all, you don't have to click on anything for this to infect your device. Number two, once your device is infected, Mr. and Mrs. America, the cameras and the mics can be activated at any time. Think about that. So I do think, and there are things that can be done. I mean, governments can regulate this technology. For years in the United States, we have had export licensing that requires certain types of military technology if it is going to be exported to be licensed, so the government knows who's getting this technology. You could easily do the same thing here. What the Pegasus story points out, and I do want to say, this is a remarkable effort of collaborative journalism.
17 different organizations around the globe.
Organized by a group called Forbidden Stories out of Paris. It's really an amazing piece of work. But I think what it pointed out is that this is such an unregulated area. Mm-hmm. And if the United States and the EU and some other big actors wanted to act, they could put a stop to this.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could put a stop to it. But the question, we've talked about this before, do they want to? Because by doing that, you may also expose your own culpability mm-hmm. in this as well. And I can't imagine that the Israelis would put something out like this on a market where you have people who can buy it, use it, and utilize the information they get from it without our intelligence organizations knowing about it and in some ways maybe even
being a customer.
Being a customer.
And I have to wonder, too, as you talk about the technology, are Google and Apple implicit in this, too? The idea of the duopoly of the Android platform, of the Apple iOS, that it makes it really easy to develop software like this when you only need to have it to work in two different places.
I mean, there may be something to that, but yeah. The question goes back to, are we going to step up? Will the U.S. government, will the EU, will others step up and say, okay, this is something that needs to be regulated? Or,
but that's them regulating themselves, right? They bought this under the auspices of using it for a different purpose.
Well, regulation without transparency gets you nowhere. So that's gonna be part of the problem, too.
Okay, let's move on and talk about something that has happened a little bit closer to home, just a little bit north of here in Champaign, Illinois, where WCIA-TV has been criticized pretty heavily for the way that it covered the killing of a police officer in the line of duty back in May. Among the many stories that the station covered during the time was this one about the man suspected of shooting the officer, who himself died in the shootout with police.
WCI3's Jane Kim is with us now. And Jane, you spoke with the Lafayette family for the first time, and it was an emotional meeting.
Three of them were crying while we talked about Lafayette. They remembering him as a compassionate person who treasured his loved ones above all else.
So you can watch Jane Kim's full report as it was posted to Facebook by some angry viewers. There was a halo in angel's wings that could be seen in the final image of Lafayette in that stand-up in the studio. The community came back and said he's no angel, even if they were using that image from what appeared to be a funeral program. Now, months later, after viewer boycotts and advertisers pulled their spots, this apology from the station's main anchor, an executive from its corporate parent, and its new news director.
We aired dozens of stories about that tragic event. One of those stories focused on the man who killed Officer Oberheim. That story upset and angered many of you. We want to let you know we understand your anger and frustration. At that time, and still today, the focus should be on a fallen hero, the family of Officer Oberheim, who lost their husband and dad, and our grieving community. That's who I think about every day, and I hate that our story got in the way of that. We don't simply want to say we're sorry now and then go back to normal operations, thinking a simple apology would make everything okay. We want to be fully transparent about the changes we're making to be sure an error like the one we made never happens again.
So we don't have time in just a half an hour to show the full piece that Jane Kim did or the other pieces as well about the police officer and about the incident. But I guess my first question is the response. Does it seem proportionate to what happened?
Well, it does if you're losing business. It does if you're being boycotted. And I think that had a lot to do with the way in which the station reacted to it by basically firing the news director, firing another person there, moving in, people bringing in corporate, doing a 4-minute apology, which lays out all the things that they're going to do. I strongly suspect that this would not have happened mm-hmm. had it not been for this months-long campaign by people in the community and the people on the right to sort of force the station to move in this direction.
I also watched this, and I've been thinking about this because I've kind of on different media blogs been kind of following this story over the course of the past few months. And there's a part of me that really wonders, isn't this other person who died, the person who is accused of shooting the police officer, doesn't he have a story to be told too? And isn't there a way that can be do that?
Oh, yeah. But I think that, you know, this is, it's an unfortunate it's unfortunate that that one image, I mean, this is TV, mm-hmm. And the picture is worth a thousand words.
Right.
And so no matter how measured, I mean, obviously when two people die and you don't know what happened here, what, you know, who was right, who was wrong, you need to be very careful. And when you use an image like that, you're skewing the story. And it was egregious how that image,
that,
who was editing?
Those few seconds,
yeah,
of B-roll.
And it completely tainted their story, but also, you know, you can see their coverage. So it was very unfortunate. I think you raise an interesting point. Was it proportionate? Was the community reaction proportionate? But it's just too bad that it was not an editorially wise choice.
No, I agree with you. I think the image it did put out this sort of halo-like angels, I mean, and all that. I mean, that was problematic. When you go back and look at the story itself made a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. They were trying to humanize this person, as they had done with the police officer as well. I think it was that last image, and the fact that the image stayed on the screen for as long as it did is what really set everything off.
Okay, so before we go, take a very close listen to this 5 seconds of audio.
You are successful, and I am successful, and I'm wondering, are you happy?
That was Anthony Bourdain, the celebrity chef and documentarian who died by suicide 3 years ago. Or was it? See, well, most of what viewers of the new film Roadrunner will see and hear is Bourdain. That 5 seconds isn't. It's a deep fake. And I have to ask, given what we started our half hour talking about, social misinformation, disinformation on different platforms, the creation of him reading this email gives people a little bit of an icky feeling.
And it should. There's no reason for this. There was absolutely no reason to do this. Like the story we were just talking about, a couple second snippet has completely overshadowed what otherwise has been a very well-reviewed film. So I think it's too bad. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should.
I would agree with that. I mean, I kept going back and I was going like, well, you know, we've seen reenactments in documentaries before. We see it all the time.
The rules are a little different.
The rules are a little different. But, you know, in this heightened sense of people expecting transparency and people wanting to know exactly how it is you did something and why, not to... There was no reason
they could have had the recipient of the email read the email Tony sent me this,
right.
And it said.
Yeah.
Everything else in the movie is his actual voice.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason for a viewer not to believe that that is his actual voice unless told otherwise. It's the lack of transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's duplicitous.
And the why, too. I mean, just to be transparent about
it. Why do it?
Is not enough. You have to say, okay, why did you do this? I mean, if there was some reason for it, then let's hear the reason. But that should have come out before the movie was released.
And we've talked about the use of this type of technology before in a good way. There was a great movie on True False 2 years ago or year before last, where it was used to disguise the face mm-hmm. of somebody who would have been in danger. But the movie makers there were completely transparent and had a good reason.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us and invite you to follow us on Facebook, on Twitter. Our handle there is @views on KBIA. You can also go to kbia.org and watch and listen to our program again. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show, Aaron Hay for handling the audio, Tim Pilcher composed our theme music. I'm Amy Simons. We'll see you next time for another edition of Views of the News.